And welcome to episode 61 of the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. I am your host, Ali, aka The Retro Hunter. So, today's show is going to be all about the console wars between Sega and Nintendo that really caught fire in the 90s, which was my golden era of console gaming. Before I really get into that though, going to cover some site news and what I've been up to lately. So firstly, on the site news side, the plans are taking shape for Retromania 2. You know, Andy's been hard at work trying to sort out a venue and how it would actually how it would play out. So hopefully there's going to be something to announce shortly. So I'm pretty excited to know exactly what's going to happen, so I'm sure you all are too. Right, so let's thank our sponsors for this month's podcast, who are Paul Davies, Uniforex, Michael Keefe, Mark Rung, Mikey J. Hay, and of course, Dino Dini. So thank you guys for contributing to the podcast this month. We really do appreciate anyone that can donate to us, because as Andy says, the site, you know, it costs money to run, it costs money to upload the podcast for you guys to listen to, so any contributions really are greatly appreciated. So thank you to all those people. If you listen and you'd like to contribute and you haven't done before, it's quite easy to do. Just jump on retroasylum.com. And in the bottom left hand of the website, you'll see a little donate button, and you can donate directly from your PayPal account. So it doesn't matter how small or how big, it's all muchly appreciated. So thank you. Right, I was originally gonna do this podcast with Rob Ty, community member, Retro Rob, on Twitter as well. Unfortunately, Rob's fallen quite poorly of late, and he is not going to be able to join me for this podcast. So I'd really like just to wish Rob all the best and hope he is feeling better again soon. So I've had to change the format of this podcast somewhat, because initially it was going to be a more kind of standard podcast with, you know, what have you been up to lately? Me and Rob are going to talk about the pickups that we've done lately. And also then we're going to go on to speak about, you know, the Sega versus Nintendo wars of the 90s. And I was going to take the side of Nintendo, because the SNES was really my favourite back in the day. And Rob was going to take the side of Sega, because he was a Sega man, well, and still is a Sega man. So we were going to kind of reenact the playground squabbles, you know, that you had with your friends and other people at school over which one was better, which had the better games, etc., etc. But I'm going to have to change it slightly now. I will talk a little bit about the wars themselves and the machines and the games, and play you some music from some of the games as well. But firstly, what have I been up to lately? Well, I'm sure you can have a pretty decent guess by now of what I get up to a lot, which is hunting those retro items. And yep, I've had a extremely busy month this last month, buying up lots of retro treasure. So, firstly, there's been a new trader at my local car boot sale, and the first day that I saw him, it had been quite a quiet day. The boot sale itself seems to have got really busy lately, and I think it's because it's the only one in the area that's now open. You know, going into winter, a lot of the summer ones have shut down now, because the fields, the landowners don't usually like the fields to be used. So when it gets to cold and rain, etc., they normally cancel them. So the one I go to is actually in a train station car park. So it's a concrete base, and that enables the boot sale to go on all year round. So what you find is a lot of the traders, and, you know, just general, not just retro gaming traders, but traders as a whole, and anyone else that wants to do a car boot sale, maybe to get some money before Christmas, they tend to go to mine, which benefits me hugely in terms of variety of stuff. However, it also means that some of the other collectors and lizards, which is kind of what my name for guys that just go around to buy retro stuff just to resell, you know, they're not collectors. They're just literally there on sole purpose to buy it all and sell it all. So finding that the retro stuff can be a little bit more tricky because there's a lot more eyes looking for it. So I have to be at the top of my game, and it's hard. I've missed some great stuff recently, but I've got some great stuff as well. But anyway, back to the story. Yeah, so it was a very quiet Sunday morning, and I hadn't really found that much. And I kind of came across a guy that was getting some plastic boxes out of his big van, and it had some vintage wrestling figures in it, which I also collect. So that's what drew me to his stall, because he only just started setting it up. Anyway, I kind of got talking to the guy, really, really nice guy he is, and I said, have you got any old, you know, old games, any retro games or anything like that? And he just kind of smiled at me, and I thought, he's not going to have anything, is he? But he said, yes, what are you after? Super Nintendo or Mega Drive or Game Gear or Game Boy? And kind of started reeling off all these different kind of systems. And I just said, well, yep, all of that, really. He said, well, okay, give me a couple of minutes and I'll get it all out for you. What do you want first? And I was like, well, can I see the Super Nintendo stuff first? So he literally just starts pulling out box after box after box, full, and I do mean full, of games. And he had absolutely everything. He had stuff from Famicom carts, which come in all various different colours, which are cool. So, you know, that's the Japanese Nintendo Entertainment System carts. He had a couple of box Lynxes handheld machines, as well as a whole tray of box Lynx games. He had huge boxes full of just Super Nintendo carts, loose Mega Drive carts, boxed Mega Drive games, huge crate full of Game Boy carts, just loose, and another one full of Game Boy Advance carts. He literally had everything. He even had Wonder Swan games, and that's really not something that you see at a car boot sale, even from a trader. So my experience with traders, they've had a little bit of decent stuff. Most of it is the generic kind of stuff you see time and time again. Most of it's quite, I wouldn't say overpriced. It's more in line with what you'd pay online for these kind of goods, but not what I would call a kind of boot sale price. But his prices are absolutely fantastic. He obviously puts the stuff in the boxes which he knows the price of, and anything that really is a more valuable piece of retro gaming treasure, he does keep separately, and he does that behind his main kind of boxes, which he spreads out all in front of him. So basically you can have a look through all the ones he's got at the front, and then you can have a look at some of the nicer stuff behind where the main stall is. And he had loads of Japanese kind of Final Fantasy sealed games, and just everything, really. I mean, with my eyes set upon how much stuff he got, I just nearly fainted. I was just, my God, where the hell do you find all this stuff? But I'm not going to complain, and I delved in, and I think he's been there every week since. I think I've spent a good 30 to 50 pounds on him every week so far, and that's probably been about 4 weeks. So I've been picking up some really, really great stuff, especially from him. Doesn't matter if the car boot's a bit rubbish now, I can go to him and know that I'm going to be able to pick up some stuff that I need in some really good condition and at a really good price. So what I bought from him, I've bought quite a lot of SNES carts, just the kind of lesser games that I needed for my collection. What else have I got? I bought a boxed copy of APB for the Atari Lynx. I also bought an AC adapter for the Atari Lynx. I've bought quite a few Mega Drive games off of him. He sells boxed Mega Drive games for $2.50 each. So that in my eyes for, you know, for a Mega Drive game boxed with the manual and a decent title that's not a sports title, I'm happy to pay that all day long. Not wouldn't like to try and haggle with him down to a pound or anything like that. I appreciate the variety of what he has, and therefore I'm really happy to pay it. He even has Game & Watches as well. He's got a few Game & Watches behind and a whole other different types of toys. He also sells Moshi Monsters and things like that, which my boy absolutely loves and delves in as well. But he just has so much stuff. It's really impressive. So apart from the boot sale, I also have been busy hunting all the retroness online as well. So I've been using some tactics to maybe buy some things off of eBay, i.e. not letting the auction finish and offering a price, and luckily those couple of ones that I've done have accepted it, and I've gone around and picked it up and they've closed the auction down. Shh, don't tell eBay. And I've managed to get a couple of really good bundles, actually. First was a really big bundle from eBay, and it was a local pickup, and I sent the guy a message saying, look, I'd really like to buy it all. What would you take for all of it? He sent me back a price, said I'm happy to pay that. And I'll arrange my own courier to come and pick it up. And he was happy with that. He boxed it all up nicely for me, and I arranged a courier. They went and picked it up and delivered it to me. But it was a great, great, great pickup. It had two Super Nintendo consoles with all the controllers and cables, etc. Two N64 consoles as well, with all the necessary controllers and wires, etc., and a whole load of games. I think there was 20 odd SNES carts, as well as about 10 boxed, I think, and over 20 N64 carts as well. So I needed the vast majority of all the games, which is why I kind of got it. So I was really happy with that. Another one I got was a very large GameCube bundle. Again, the same method. It popped up on eBay, local kind of pickup. Well, in fact, this one wasn't a local pickup. And I sent them a message asking if I could come pick it up and would they accept an offer. And luckily they did. And it was an even better bundle when I actually picked it up than what I first thought. So this was a Nintendo GameCube bundle, which I could see from the picture had one of the little LCD TV screens that fits onto the top, allows you to play it in the car. It had a boxed Game Boy player as well, which included the disc you need to put in the Game Boy to make it work, and allows you to play Game Boy Advance games through your GameCube on your TV. I had a player, but I was missing the disc, and the disc can be quite pricey, so I was very happy to get it as part of this bundle. It also had really nice carry case, all the wires, the cigarette lighter for the car adapter, power pack for the TV screen. It literally had everything. It had a couple of boxed link cables for Game Boy Advance. Or no, the link cable to the Game Boy player to the Game Boy Advance machine. It had two boxed ones of those. It had over 20 games as well, which had some really good titles in it, like Luigi's Mansion, Super Mario Sunshine, Smash Brothers Melee, I think it was, as well. But again, all the other remaining games were good as well, like Crazy Taxi. Crikey, I can't remember what the other ones were now, but a really good bundle and something I was really happy to get. And when I went and picked it up, I was even happier, because I found out that it was a charity sale and it was all going to go to a local hospice. So I'm glad that I gave them a really good amount for it as well. I mean, by no means was it a cheap kind of bundle, but it did represent value on all the stuff that you got with it. So I'm happy to pay those, as long as I'm getting, you know, value for my money. I'm not trying to get everything for a five or anything like that. I appreciate that some stuff's worth more than the others, so I will pay the amount. But I think maybe my favourite pickup of the lot has been a recent one. And I found it on an online site and saw it for the buy it now amount, so I got it. And that is a complete and mint condition Grandstand BMX Burner LCD handheld game. Now, I really do love all the old grandstand machines, and I've got quite a few boxed. And I saw this and just saw the condition of it and thought, oh, that's beauty. It's beautiful. I need it. So I bought it, and it really is in mint condition. The polystyrene inserts are fantastic. The LCD game itself still has the plastic wrap around it. So I'm really, really happy with that. And it looks absolutely amazing. It's going to be a really good addition to my collection. So that's really a quick delve into my recent pickups, and I could go on and on and on, but I'm here to tell a story, and it's not about my pickups. It's about Sega versus Nintendo. So I'll get on with that. If you're interested to see any of the pictures of my pickups, then give me a follow on Twitter. You can find me by name, which of course is at the Retro Hunter. And you'll be able to see pictures of all the gloriousness that I've managed to pick up. But for now, let's get on with the show. I'll begin by giving a little bit of background into both of the machines that I'm predominantly going to talk about, which is the Sega Mega Drive and the Super Nintendo. Of course, there was rivalry between Sega and Nintendo before the 16-bit era. In the home console market, it was really the Famicom of Japan, which is known as the NES in America, and the Sega Master System. Now, the Sega Master System, while popular in Japan and Europe, really did not take off in North America whatsoever. That was heavily, heavily dominated by Nintendo's NES system. In fact, I saw a statistic the other day that said that there was an NES in one in every four homes in America. And believe me, that is a lot of NESs. So they were really, really, Sega were coming from behind with the release of the Mega Drive. And they did get the console there, the Mega Drive out before Nintendo's 16-bit console. The Mega Drive was actually firstly released in Japan back in October 1988. But the timing wasn't great, because a week before that, Nintendo had released Super Mario Bros. 3, which, as we all know, is a fantastic game. So the attention was slightly towards Nintendo even then. Plus, Sega really didn't manage to ship that many units in the first year. I believe it was only 400,000 units they were able to ship. So they were really up against it. And in the Japanese market, they never really did claw it back. They were always a distant third behind the Nintendo Super Famicom and the NEC's PC Engine. And that really did last until the end of the 16-bit era there. However, they did better in North America and in Europe on the whole. The North American release date for the system was actually January 1989. And at the time, Sega didn't actually possess a company based in North America. So what they did for the Master System was they actually allowed a distributor called Tonka to distribute the system itself. So when Sega were actually looking for a new partner initially in the North American territory, they approached Atari CEO Jack Tramiel, and Tramiel actually declined to acquire the rights to the system, and they really looked at it and thought it was a bit too expensive, and they wanted to concentrate on the development of the Atari ST. So Sega actually launched their own subsidiary, which became Sega of America, which dealt with the launch. The launch was actually in August, and it was January when Sega were talking to and trying to find partners in the North American area. The European launch didn't come until November 1990, which I think allowed them obviously to develop games for the Master System a little bit longer, and they really knew that was probably their best area, so it naturally got there a bit later, as they were still marketing the Master System itself. It launched in Europe with some really good titles, as well as the real arcade classics like Altered Beast and Ghouls and Ghosts and Golden Axe and and things like that. And that's, it really did start off as it meant to go on, because Sega was really looked upon as the arcade conversion kings, and the Mega Drive itself handled them really, really well. Even though I'm a SNES kind of fanboy, I do have a lot of time for the Sega Mega Drive. I had one before I had a SNES, and it was excellent for arcade conversions. And I think that's really what the buyers look for. A lot of people kind of look for arcade conversions, and the Super Nintendo was a little bit different to that. It was a slightly different style, but that's definitely what got Sega a lot of fans, was its arcade-like games. So the Super Nintendo itself, it took a while in development, to be honest, because Nintendo really didn't want to, kind of reluctant to design a new system because of the popularity of their NES. So the Super Famicom, as it's known in Japan, was actually released in November 1990, with the initial shipment being quite low again, but selling out within hours. It reached North America in August 1991, and then Europe and Australia and in April 1992. And despite real stiff competition for the already in the market and established Mega Drive, the Super Nintendo would eventually go on to take over the top spot in terms of who won the console wars, but it did take them a very long time, and it wasn't really until their later generation of games that it eventually tipped the scales. So I've looked up and researched some statistics based on the amount of games sold on each console, but I can only find details for North America, so it doesn't really tell the whole picture. But I'll run down some of the more popular games which were on the Super Nintendo and how many they sold. So in first place, if you couldn't already guess, of course, is Super Mario World, which was an absolutely fantastic, well, still is an absolutely fantastic game. And majority of the early console bundles had this bundled within it, and that was a really good selling point for the Super Nintendo, because Super Mario World was such a good game. People were buying the system just to play that game initially. And in North America, that went on to sell 20.6 million copies. The number two spot in terms of total games sold, remember this is just in the North American market, was Donkey Kong Country on 9 million. Then came Super Mario Kart on 8 million. Street Fighter 2 was in fourth spot, the World Warrior Edition, 6.3 million. After that was A Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. Then Donkey Kong Country 2 with 4 million. And Street Fighter 2 Turbo Edition, 4.8 million. So if you combine the two, that would actually put it, just for the Street Fighter 2 game itself as a whole, would put it in second spot ahead of Donkey Kong Country. Star Fox sold 4 million. And Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island still managed to rake in sales of 4 million, even though that was released quite late on in the console's life. I know that for me, I'd already kind of gone on to other things by the time that game was released. I didn't even see that being released initially back in the day. I'd found girls and beer, I think, by then. So the Mega Drive did sell a lot of games as well. And again, this is just the North American figures, just to give you an idea. Sonic the Hedgehog was the most popular game, over 5 million copies sold. Again, that was bundled in, not initially with the Mega Drive, because it didn't come out straight away. Initially, I think the main game bundled with the Mega Drive was Altered Beast. Sonic 2 sold 6 million copies. Then Aladdin in third place, 4 million copies. NBA Jam makes the list with 1.93 million copies, Mortal Kombat 1.78, and Street Fighter 2 Special Champion Edition 1.65 million copies sold. But I thought that might just be a decent bit of trivia there for you to have a look at. Now, there was an excellent rivalry between Nintendo and Sega which resulted in one of the most fiercest console wars in the history of video games. Sega very, very much positioned their console as the cool machine, you know, the one with the more mature titles aimed at the older kind of gamer. And it really did have some edgy adverts as well, and they really did attack Nintendo in those. Just have a little listen to this one and see what you think about this. Some great marketing as well.
Genesis does
16-bit sports strategy.
You can't do this on Nintendo. Genesis does
16-bit sports moves.
You can't do this on Nintendo.
Nintendo. The 16-bit Genesis system by Sega. Genesis does it all.
Of course, Nintendo did hit back with their own adverts, but they were not as personal, shall we say, as the Sega ones. This is the typical Nintendo advert of the time. Have a little listen to this.
Stay calm. Concentrate on the screen. Street Fighter 2 is on Super Nintendo. From the arcades, the ultimate combat game. Each fighter has a different technique, an acrobatic move, a hidden punch. It's on the streets now, exclusively on Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo with Street Fighter 2. It's unbeatable.
To combat the NES's kind of rise, really, Sega did bring out some really good additions to the Mega Drive itself. So firstly, it was really unsuccessful on the whole, but it's a really good addition now, especially on the retro side of things. They obviously brought out the Mega CD, which added a CD drive peripheral and allowed you to play superior quality games via your Mega Drive. Of course, it wasn't cheap, but it was a good addition, and it did provide a little boost for the Mega Drive. Of course, Sega didn't actually stop there. They actually went on to also produce the 32X, which really gave it 32-bit power. But again, it was another peripheral which you had to kind of spend to get to play that kind of game. The Super Nintendo didn't really bring... of course, there's the infamous disc, the CD drive that was being worked on, which was being done by Sony, which of course ended up being the Sony PlayStation, but we've kind of covered that before. The only other real peripheral that I can think of that the Super Nintendo had really was probably the Super Game Boy. That's about as big as it got, really, I think. The Super Game Boy, of course, was a kind of cartridge looking piece of kit which went into the Super Nintendo and allowed you to play Game Boy games through it, which was quite cool actually. It adds a bit of colour to some games as well and puts a little border around the screen, so it actually looks like the front of a Game Boy with the little border around it, with even the battery light on it as well. Now, something also debated quite a lot is which system actually had the better capabilities of playing music, and a lot of people will say that the Mega Drive sound is tinny and the Super Nintendo sound is much better, and to be honest, I think I'd probably agree with that. But that's not to say that the Mega Drive didn't have some absolutely amazing pieces of music on there. So what I'm going to do now for a little while is just play you some of probably not the most chosen music for the Mega Drive, but they're ones that, while doing my research, they're ones that struck me as some really good pieces of music. So I thought, for a little section of the show now, go make yourself a cup of tea, have a little sit down, listen to some tunes that I've picked out for you. Firstly, we're going to be looking at the Sega Mega Drive songs, and first up is going to be Mega Man, The Wily Ways. So sit back, have a little listen to this and see what you think. Enjoyed that. Now we're going to move on to give you a little hint of what the Super Nintendo music was like. So I've picked out what I think is a lot of people's favourite music on the SNES as a whole. So this is Donkey Kong Aquatic Ambience from, of course, Donkey Kong Country. So sit back, have a little listen to this and see what you think. So now time for some more music, and we're going to hit back with the snares as well. And this music, it's not that it's particularly impressive for being done on the kind of hardware itself. It's more, I really like this because it's really catchy, and I've only really gotten to listen to this recently by playing this game for the first time as recommended by Andy. And I can't kind of get this music out of my head. It's just so catchy. And this, of course, is the music from Castlevania 4. So have a little listen and let me know what you think.
Sega Mega Drive song I'm going to play you from a game is from a game called Soleil. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'd never heard of this game, never played it, but the music is pretty awesome. And this is the Rafizia Training Ground music. So have a little listen to this. Big difference really between the console wars of today and the console wars of yesteryear really is that the majority of games that come out for the, you know, the current gen of consoles, they more or less come out for both consoles. There are still exclusives on Xbox and there's still exclusives on Sony PlayStation, but majority of games will come out for both. Whereas back in the day, this really wasn't the case. There were lots of games that came out just for one of the consoles, and there was exclusivity on certain big titles. And I think something that really did help the Super Nintendo really boost its sales figures were the fact that they tied up the exclusive rights to the Street Fighter 2 game. And I think it literally, maybe even a year before it came out on the Mega Drive, or possibly a bit less, possibly a bit more. But that is the reason a lot of people, you know, cashed in on their, excuse me. That's why a lot of people traded in Mega Drives or sold them in the back of the papers, or to a mate, or took it to a market. A lot of people did trade them in to get a Super Nintendo as soon as they saw that Street Fighter 2 was going to be on the Super Nintendo. And it really was a good ploy by Nintendo to boost their sales. But I'm just going to run through some of the games that, you know, I know were exclusive to the Super Nintendo, which really did help them, you know, in high sales. And that's of course the Donkey Kong Country games. You know, Donkey Kong Country 1, 2, and 3. Super Mario World was 1. You had RPGs, which people really like as well, like the Final Fantasy series helped them, Chrono Trigger, games like the, you know, the Castlevania series as well. Super Metroid was a really big selling point for the Super Nintendo. Of course, there was Street Fighter 2, which the Mega Drive did get later. But, you know, The Legend of Zelda even was a really big franchise for Nintendo. And if you had the if you had the NES system, then it's highly likely that you're going to go on and get a Super Nintendo and get Legends of Zelda when it came out, because what I've found is Nintendo fans are quite hardcore. You know, they will stick with the system. They will buy all the Mario games, and I think I'm actually becoming one myself, because I've been really addicted to all the different Mario games recently. But they are really good games. But I do like my arcade games. I do like my Sega games as well. I'm trying to think of Mega Drive games that are only out on the Mega Drive and didn't actually make it to the Super Nintendo, and I think there'd be quite a lot of arcade games in that. So obviously the Streets of Rage series was a really big selling point for the Super for the Sega Mega Drive. Of course, Sonic the Hedgehog was a big hit for Sega as well. They really needed to come up with something to rival the popularity of Mario, and they really did do a good job on coming up with Sonic the Hedgehog. Not my favourite type of game, to be perfectly honest with you. I do like it, but it's not something I would necessarily go back and play again and again and again. But a lot of people did like this game, and a lot of people bought it, and a lot of people still love, you know, Sonic nowadays. Micro Machines was a fantastic racer on the Mega Drive, which was never out on the Super Nintendo. Road Rash was a good series as well. Toe Jam and Earl were really good favourites of mine as on the system, which of course never came out to the, never made it across to the Super Nintendo. As I said, originally I was planning to have a section of this podcast where I was going to take the side of Sega. I was going to take the side of Nintendo, and Rob was going to take the side of Sega. But unfortunately, we couldn't do that. So I'm interested to know about all you listeners. Who did you kind of side with in the console war? Were you a Sega person, or were you a Nintendo person? I was originally a Sega person, and then I defected when I saw the Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo just appealed to me more. I think I was probably drawn in initially by Street Fighter 2, but then some of the other games on there as well I absolutely love, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I collect mainly now for the Super Nintendo, although I've got quite a nice Mega Drive collection as well. But I'm interested to know what camp you were in and why. So I'll start a thread up on the forum of Retro Asylum. If you haven't yet introduced yourself to us on the forum, please do so. Come and sign up, give us a little introduction, say who you are, come and interact with us. We want to hear your thoughts. So I'll put a thread up, and it'll be called Sega vs. Nintendo. So I would like you to respond and just a little bit about which one you had and why, and you know what your top five games were on it. You can also tweet me at my Twitter handle, which is at the Retro Hunter. But Twitter's only 140 characters. You can never properly have an in-depth gaming conversation with someone. You always have to take words out, except bad bad punctuation. And you can never really truly say what you want to say. So that's why there is a Retro Asylum forum. You can post, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs if you want to put your view across about something. It's a really good place to have an in-depth discussion about games. Twitter is good if you want quick responses and stuff, but a bit more in-depth conversation can be had on the forum. So if you do listen to this podcast and you want to talk to us directly, sign up on the forum and get posting. We'd love to hear from you. So I think I'll wrap it up now in terms of the main theme of the podcast. It did alter a lot in terms of format, considering what I was planning to do. So hope you still found it enjoyable and interesting. As I said, I did have to change it quite a lot, so I appreciate it's probably not going to be as long a podcast as I originally planned, but I will add some music to the end of the podcast. I'm trying to think of another good tune to play. I'll let it be a surprise, in fact, so hope you enjoy the song that you're going to hear. As always, please, guys and girls, please leave us an iTunes review. It really does help us get noticed. It's really good to appear in the top charts, so helps us get noticed, helps us get more more listeners. So please do, if you have an iTunes account, jump on there and leave us a review, preferably a 5-star one, but be honest, you know, if we get positive feedback, we can improve the show even further. So I'd just like to also mention as well, if anyone happened to watch the Charlie Brooker program that was on recently, How Video Games Changed the World, I think it was. Quite a good program. I enjoyed watching it. Some good nods to the retro scene, and pointed out some games that really did kind of change gaming from then on, like a groundbreaking game where everything changed. And some of these were on the Mega Drive and Super Nintendo. So it was a really important bit, the 16-bit era. It's what drew a lot of people into gaming, and there was a console war, and I think you would say that the Super Nintendo won on the whole, even though it didn't in America, but they're both absolutely amazing systems. I really do like them both. There'll always be a good place in my heart for both of them, although the SNES is my favourite. I do really like the Mega Drive. I have a Mega Drive bag that I use for work and my retro hunting, so it really is a fond console for me, and I do like the peripherals that the Mega Drive had as well. One thing I didn't mention actually is one of the holy grails for me in terms of retro collecting is of course the Sega Multimega, which was the last kind of version which combined the Mega Drive and the CD into a slimline console. It's one of my most favourites that you can get. It's also quite expensive, hence why I don't have one at the moment. I'm trying to find it for a bargain price, but one I missed by 10 minutes that sold for £10. Hopefully I'm going to find one equally as good value for that one day. Another honourable mention to Sega as well, which does relate to this, is of course the Sega Nomad, which enabled you to play Mega Drive games, but in a handheld system. Unfortunately, it never saw a European release. It was only released in North America and Japan, I believe, but that's a really nice piece of kit if you're a Sega fan, especially a Mega Drive fan, because you could play American Mega Drive games on the go. So that's worthwhile having a little lookout for, keeping an eye out for, just in case one pops up. It's doubtful it will do. You're most likely to see it on eBay than you are a charity shop or a car boot sale, to be fair. But keep your eye out. You never know. If you see a little odd looking machine that says Sega Nomad and it's a bargain price, grab it with both hands. But for now, guys, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for bearing with me considering the format change of this quite a lot. So a lot of this I had to do kind of last minute research on, so I may have got some things wrong, I may have missed out some things. Apologies for that if I have. As I said before, jump on the forum if you want to discuss which was your favourite and what your favourite games were. The thread will be there waiting for you, so please jump on and let us know your thoughts. Again, if you've not jumped on the forum and introduced yourself to us yet, please do so. We'd be great to have you and to talk about retro games with you. But for now, thanks a lot, guys. iTunes reviews would be much appreciated, and enjoy this last piece of music. Thanks a lot.